Welcome to Walden Pod. I'm your host, Emerson Green. Imagine that pain and pleasure were inverted. Behavior that usually brought about painful experiences instead brought about pleasant experiences, and vice versa. Poking yourself in the eye with a stick felt like quenching your thirst. Eating a good meal felt like being burned. Adaptive behavior felt excruciating, while maladaptive behavior was rewarding. To make matters worse, you continue behaving in the same ways you ordinarily do in this nightmarish world. You helplessly watch your own limbs move as you go on doing things that were agonizingly painful. The reason this hellish existence seems so far-fetched is that we ordinarily take our experiences to have causal efficacy. Pain and pleasure often motivate your behavior. The unpleasantness of hunger and the satisfaction of eating a good meal are more than enough to incentivize the right actions. But what if consciousness had no causal influence over your behavior? What if your feelings, experiences, sensations, and so on were completely superfluous to the physical workings of your brain and body? Then the hellish world would be possible. If epiphenomenalism is true, then mental causation is just an illusion. Even if the experiences of pain and pleasure were inverted, you'd be behaving in exactly the same way you do now. To back up a step, epiphenomenalism is the view that consciousness has no physical effects. Mental events are superfluous to the physical activity in the brain. Experiences, like the ones you're having right now, have no effect on physical events or on one another. Epiphenomenalists take the physical realm to be causally closed. Every physical event involved in human behavior and brain functioning has a sufficient causal explanation in terms of prior physical events. Mental events exert no causal influence whatsoever. In The Principles of Psychology, William James offered an evolutionary argument against epiphenomenalism. Quote, "There is a set of facts which seem explicable on the supposition that consciousness has causal efficacy. It is a well-known fact that pleasures are generally associated with beneficial, pains with detrimental experiences. All the fundamental vital processes illustrate this law. Starvation, suffocation, privation of food, drink and sleep, work when exhausted, burns, wounds, inflammation, the effects of poison, are as disagreeable as filling the hungry stomach, enjoying rest and sleep after fatigue, exercise after rest, and a sound skin and unbroken bones at all times are pleasant." Some have suggested that these coincidences are due not to any pre-established harmony, but to the mere action of natural selection, which would certainly kill off in the long run any breed of creatures to whom the fundamentally noxious experience seemed enjoyable. An animal that should take pleasure in feeling suffocation would, if that pleasure were efficacious enough to make him immerse his head in water, enjoy a longevity of 4 or 5 minutes. But if pleasures and pains have no efficacy, one does not see why the most noxious acts, such as burning, might not give thrills of delight, and the most necessary ones, such as breathing, cause agony. End quote. The impressive, systematic correlations between adaptive behavior and pleasure and maladaptive behavior and displeasure, on the epiphenomenalist view, are just a fortunate coincidence. Suffocation, starving, burning, and so on are correlated with unpleasant experiences, while eating, rest, and sex are correlated with pleasure. If epiphenomenalism is true, it just as easily could have been the other way around. Why? Because experiences are invisible to natural selection. They play no role in motivating behavior, since they play no causal role at all. We typically think that natural selection molds our mental profile. That which aids in survival and reproduction is incentivized by experiences with a positive hedonic valence, while maladaptive behavior is disincentivized by experiences with a negative hedonic valence. The epiphenomenalist isn't free to help himself to this kind of explanation, since experiences, like the ones you're having now, don't factor into the causal chain. But if our experiences aren't motivating behavior, how would natural selection have any way of favoring the correlations we witness over any other set of correlations? I suppose we're just lucky that we don't find ourselves in the hell world described at the outset. We'd go on behaving exactly as we are right now, even if our conscious experiences were radically different. Whether the unit of natural selection is the gene, the individual, the group, some combination thereof, or something else entirely, selection is acting on the physical behavior of natural processes. If epiphenomenalism is true, consciousness has no influence over evolution, for essentially the same reason that other causally effete things, for instance abstract objects like numbers and triangles, have no influence over evolution. If conscious experiences have no physical effects, they could not possibly cause differences in genetic fitness. So, if you think we could potentially explain the correlations we observe through natural selection, you must reject epiphenomenalism. That's a precondition for invoking natural selection. If you strip consciousness of any causal influence, there's no chance that an evolutionary explanation could do any work for you. Here's philosopher of mind Hedda Hassel-Merk summarizing the evolutionary argument. Quote, why is pain correlated with stimuli detrimental to survival and reproduction, such as suffocation, hunger, and burning? And why is pleasure correlated with stimuli beneficial to survival and reproduction, such as eating and breathing? According to the argument, the fact that we have these particular correlations, and not other ones, must have an evolutionary explanation. But given epiphenomenalism, differences in phenomenal properties could not cause differences in fitness. So natural selection would not be expected to favor these correlations over any other ones. Epiphenomenalism thus renders these correlations an inexplicable coincidence, and should therefore be rejected. End quote. This is an abductive argument, an inference to the best explanation. What needs explaining is the fact that pain is generally correlated with stimuli detrimental to survival and reproduction, while pleasure is generally correlated with stimuli beneficial to survival and reproduction. On epiphenomenalism, there's no reason to expect these correlations. In fact, it's at least equally likely that maladaptive behavior would systematically correlate with positive hedonic states. There's nothing you could do about it, you'd behave in exactly the same way. And for the record, these alternative correlation schemes don't have to be nightmarish pain-pleasure inversion scenarios. The correlations could have been something hedonically neutral, but still mismatching and disharmonious. Luck is not a good explanation of the systematic correlations we observe. I don't think the correlations are the product of pure chance and good fortune, so I don't think epiphenomenalism is true. As an aside, I'll mention that epiphenomenalists should seriously consider becoming theists, since they've inadvertently brought about a good argument for a benevolent designer. If you're convinced that epiphenomenalism is true, then we're exceptionally fortunate to find ourselves in a harmoniously tuned mental world. A benevolent designer could explain our good fortune, but epiphenomenalism on its own cannot. Even epiphenomenalism plus natural selection cannot. So in the absence of some other hypothesis that makes the valuable, harmonious correlations more likely, epiphenomenalism is spectacularly implausible. If epiphenomenalism is true, mental causation is an illusion. Even if pain and pleasure were inverted, you'd continue behaving in exactly the same way you do now. Even if your visual field was composed of undifferentiated static, you'd verbally report seeing exactly what you're seeing right now. Even if you intend to raise your arm, you may raise your eyebrows. Your conscious intentions have nothing to do with determining your physical behavior. This is counterintuitive, to say the least. It also leaves us completely unable to explain why our experiences line up appropriately with our behavior, just as if experiences are motivating behavior. It sure seems like I'm eating good food that's beneficial to survival and avoiding rotten meat because of tastes and smells and so forth in consciousness. Presumably, natural selection made it so that I recoil at rotting meat and am drawn to good-smelling food. Those experiences motivate and incentivize those adaptive behaviors. This is not the case for epiphenomenalists. So how is it then that the correlations illustrated by James evolved if experiences are invisible to natural selection? So for a related argument against epiphenomenalism, one that greatly expands on this basic idea, check out my interview with Dustin Crummett on psychophysical harmony. Thank you for listening. I've been Emerson Green, and I'll talk to you next time.